Take your Bibles and turn to Daniel chapter 6. Daniel chapter 6. Part of our reading this week in our daily Bible reading included this passage. And Daniel and the lion's den. How do you pass that up and not preach on that or talk about that? So, it's one of those lessons where most of our small children are going to know something about Daniel and the lion's den. And as I'm thinking about it, it's not really something I've preached on much. I've taught classes on it, but not too often I can think of I've really preached about it. And the lesson tonight is going to be a very simple one, just a careful look at the text, a contextual study, kind of read our way through it and make a few comments, and then see if there's some points of conclusion that we can draw or some lessons learned. We think about the time period here of Daniel chapter 6. It had been long ago now that the Assyrians had invaded Israel and had taken them captive. It was just a period of time after that, and the Babylonian invasion took place, and all of Israel, as we would know, that of the promised land, and all that was taken over. Well, in time, by the days we read about of Daniel chapter 6, it was the Medo-Persian Empire that had gained so much power and was the world dominant power at the time. You look at the map here, you can see the gray area that covers the biggest part of what we're looking at. We think about Jerusalem and we realize Jerusalem is this little spot right down here. Here is what would have been the land of Israel. But the Medo-Persian Empire, look, it goes all the way across here. It's a huge nation now, and power of incredible proportions. And so when we think about, we try to define these days world power, in that day, that would have been world power, the Medo-Persian Empire. When we come into Daniel chapter 6, it's Darius, who was a servant of King Cyrus of Persia, who comes into our story. And so Darius, was more or less the king of what had been the Babylonian Empire that has now been consumed by King Cyrus of Persia. And so that's kind of where our story takes up, and we understand a little bit more about the place of Daniel in the old area that was known as Babylonia, but is now part of the Medo-Persian Empire. And so with that, we go to our text of Daniel chapter 6, and we start reading. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel was so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. And so over the region here that Darius ruled, he had 120 satraps, or like governors, that helped rule in that area. But there were three administrators over them, Daniel being one of them. But Daniel has now distinguished himself in such a way that Darius is going to put him over all of these, make him like the ruler of the land. And so we learn some things about Daniel right off in the story here in chapter 6. We already know some things about Daniel in the verse or chapters prior. But here we can see that his character was something that was different. His character was that which was above reproach. And he was a trusted leader. And his godly character set him above all others. And he stood out this way. And Darius wanted to make him leader over all of the others. Well, all of that sounds wonderful and good. Except it was going to be bothersome to some. Some of those other leaders that Daniel would be over, they were jealous about it. I mean, that's just the bottom line. They were like green with jealousy here. And so we see a problem that is so often something that we see in the world. We don't want to see it in the Lord's church, though it happens there sometimes too. But here are some lessons. There will be some lessons learned from that. And so there were great honors that were given to Daniel. And because his character was so outstanding, there was no grounds for charges. There was no corruption. He was trustworthy in every way. And of course, Darius saw that. And so in verse 4, we continue, and it says, At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God." Think about the jealousy of these men just a little bit. As we said, green with envy, as we say sometimes. I mean, they have just tried to find some means, some way, that they could make some accusations against him. You know, you would think there would be some chink in his armor somewhere. You know, there'd be something that they could say in a derogatory way, but they just couldn't find anything. And so they're going to have to come up with something. You can almost imagine this kind of plotting because we've all seen it before at some point in our life. If it's not in school among little kids who finds one who is maybe more popular than them and they try to get some of their friends together to cause problems for that one. Or maybe in the workplace where someone has distinguished themselves in their work and role and there are others who are jealous about that who try to undermine their work. Jealousy. That's what it is. Even in the Lord's church, sometimes that happens. If one has tried to be of an upstanding character and have tried to live a godly life, sometimes there are those who become jealous. Instead of trying to emulate them as they emulate Christ, they try to find some reason that they can cast stones or cause a problem. And that's what Daniel was dealing with, those who were trying to cause a problem, but they could find no wrongdoing. And so they contrived a plan to use Daniel's faithfulness against him. There was no place else they could go. There was nothing else that they could do. And so they were going to try to use what was his greatest strength against him. Well, it's not going to work the way they thought and the way that they wanted to. Verse 6. So the administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king and said, "O King Darius, live forever." The royal administrators, the prefects, the satraps, the advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, O king, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. So King Darius put the decree in writing. We think and we wonder a little bit, well, why did he do that? Well, you know, you have all these other leaders come to you and they butter you up and slick you up in such a way to actually make you think you're somebody. Well, he was somebody. He was the king. But now they've tried to put him on some playing field level with all their gods. And so they're saying, like, surely no one should pray to anybody except you. And evidently, he got pretty comfortable with that because he was willing to make a decree. He was willing to make a law that way, forbidding prayer to any god other than Darius. Well, that is pretty bold, isn't it? I mean, now he is admitting that he is a god or he has the power of a god. And I guess in the minds of many men, the king would have that kind of power. Well, the offenders now would be cast into the lion's den. I mean, here was a law that was going to be made with no option to change it because that was the law of the Medes and Persians. I don't know why it was that way. I tried to study sometime or look up some things about why the Medes and the Persians had a law that could not be repealed. I still don't understand why it was that way, but it was. Once the king enacted a law, that was it. It stayed that way. And even if that king decided later, you know, that wasn't a good idea, I wish I hadn't done that, he still couldn't change it. That's a pretty peculiar law, but it's what it was. History would record that for us as well. And so King Darius put that law into writing. Well, Daniel knew about the law. Well, of course he did. I mean, he was one of the chief administrators, and everyone in the land would have known about the law. And this is going to cause a particular problem with Daniel. And, of course, that's why the others encouraged the law to be enacted, because they thought, well, we've got him now. I mean, here, you know, Daniel has been able to position himself in such a way that he's going to be over us. He's going to have greater power than we have. He has the ear of the king. Their only way they could get rid of him would be to kill him. Or better yet, to have the king make a law that would have him put to death. Verse 10, we continue. Now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and he prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or man except to you, O king, would be thrown into the lion's den? And the king answered, the decree stands in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. And then they said to the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day. And when the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Imagine now what the king is thinking, because Daniel was the one in whom he had the most confidence, the one that he was going to make the administrator over all of the others. And so, it, like, Daniel was his friend. And now, as this comes to his attention, he knows he can't back up, because even he's just confirmed again that the law cannot be repealed. And it's a law that he made. And so he's in a terrible fix. But let's talk about Daniel for just a moment. I mean, the faith, the conviction, the confidence of Daniel that led him to continue to pray to God, knowing about the king's law. It didn't stop him. It didn't slow him down in any way. You know, it takes a lot of faith to stand up and to do what you know to be right, and to do what God would want and expect you to do, even when you know there's going to be some very serious repercussions by the hands of men. And Daniel demonstrated that kind of faith in confidence. He was willing to go ahead and do what he had already been doing. It was not as though it was something new. Of course, that's why the other leaders brought this up to the king, because they knew that this is what Daniel did every day, three times a day. He would go and he would pray. And so Daniel just kept on doing what he had been doing all along. Now the king, Darius, he's upset, and he's trying to think of any way he can to rescue Daniel, and made every effort until sundown, because at sundown he would be cast into the lion's den. But Darius had no choice but to obey his law. There would have to be some emphasis here. It was his law. Of course, he would have to obey that. Verse 15. Then the men went as a group to the king and said to him, remember, O king, that according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed. So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. And the king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you. A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating, without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. We get some insight of just how upset and distraught the king is to think about what might be happening to his most trusted administrator, to his friend Daniel. And he had tried in every way to save Daniel. But you know, it was those other governors, those other administrators that came and reminded the king again of what he already knows. You know, O king, that according to the laws of the Medes and Persians, that your law cannot be changed. As if Darius didn't know that already. It was almost like just kind of rubbing it in his face, it seems. And the king finally had to give that order to throw Daniel into the lion's den. Well, it had to be a peculiar few minutes right there, don't you suppose? I mean, as they went and got Daniel, they brought him before the king, and the king is trying to explain, well, Daniel, here's what I have to do, because there's this law, and I can't change the law. And the empty pit in the stomach of King Darius at that point, you know, as he realizes here that this is, I've wrought death upon Daniel. Oh, but there is one exception here. May your God, whom you continually serve, rescue you. And I'm still not exactly sure how to read that. Was there some question in his mind, like maybe your God, the one you serve, perhaps he'll rescue you? Or was it more defiant and confident? Was he saying, may your God, the one you serve, rescue you? I'm not sure exactly which way it was said, but I could almost hear it both ways. Now, after the event is done, I know how Darius would have said it then, when there would be proof that Jehovah God was with Daniel. Early in the morning, the king rushed to the lion's den. He couldn't sleep all night, remember? He couldn't eat. He was awake all night just waiting for the dawn. And then verse 19. At the first of dawn, the light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. And when he came near the den, he called to Daniel. And in an anguished voice, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions? Daniel answered, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have they ever done any wrong before you. Have I ever done any wrong before you, O king? And the king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted out of the den, no wound was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. Amazing. It's just an amazing story to think about this event as it unfolds. And if Darius had been noticing the faith of Daniel before, imagine how he sees the faith of Daniel now. And if he had any question before, maybe your king or your God will rescue you, he had no question now. Because these were fierce lions that were just waiting to devour whomever was thrown into this den. And so Darius saw the power of the living God. And maybe for a while he was fooled into thinking that he was somebody, that he was even like a god, and that his subjects should pray to him. Well, his mind has changed about this now, because he knows the power of the living God. No doubt, as king, he had some authority and power, even power to cast someone into the lion's den. But Jehovah God has demonstrated a power that goes far beyond, a power to rescue his own, his people, from the hands of even evil men. And so he was overjoyed to find Daniel safe and without scratch. But it goes on after that. Verse 24, at the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples and the nations and men of every language throughout the land, may you prosper greatly. I have issued a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Well, indeed, the power of God has been demonstrated in an incredible way.
once again. And even the mighty king saw the power of the living God and commanded his subjects to praise God. And so you think about the story here, the lesson of Daniel in the lion's den. And we think for a moment about what can we learn? What are some of the lessons learned here? I know we can think of several, but just some that stand out, maybe in an obvious way. One is Jehovah God is always aware of the affairs of men. God always knows what is going on. That's demonstrated throughout the Bible story. We see it over and over again. But even the wisest of men are foolish compared to the wisdom of God. And that there is nothing that escapes the eyes or the mind of God, and that he is always aware and can exercise control any time he so chooses. Well, as well, godly people can excel in an ungodly world. We can see that with Daniel. I mean, those that were about him, those he worked with, and those who were under him, and even the king that was above him, at least for a period of time, would not necessarily be considered godly men. They didn't follow the will of Jehovah God. And yet he still excelled. He became a very powerful man in that kingdom. God helped him to get there. And it would seem to be something to do with his faithfulness, his godliness, his concern for doing what God would want that helped put him there. Godly people can excel even in an ungodly world. And if we are godly, our character will be above reproach. There was nothing ill that could be said about Daniel. They tried. They tried to find, you know, some angle that they could go at to find some reason to bring a charge to the king about Daniel. But there was nothing. There was not anything that they could say about Daniel. His character was just so squeaky clean, we say sometimes. Immaculate, indeed. We all be that way, we hope. If we do the right thing, we are recognized for it. Now, when we do the right thing in this life, men do not always see that we do the right thing. But overall, even the wicked will see something different about us. And it might be that it encourages them to do what's right. Sometimes that happens. Or it could be that it'll make them hate us. It could make them be jealous. But that cannot make us stop from doing the right thing. When others notice that we are making the right choices and right decisions and that we are living for God, we can't let them do anything that would change that. It's okay if they recognize that we do the right thing. And then there's this fact. The servants of Satan will work against us. There's no news here. We're not treading new ground, are we? I mean, it's always been that way. That the servants of Satan will work against those who are trying to do what is right. Those who are trying to live a godly life. And if our faith is unwavering, we stand the possibility and the opportunity to have influence for good on people maybe who are living an ungodly life. If we do what is right, if our faith is unwavering, and this becomes a very important part, if our faith is unwavering, because if our faith has that weak spot, and if we do not live as God would want us to live, and others see that, if evil see that, they just simply go, aha, he's not all he claims to be. You see, he's not so perfect. Or he's just like us. But if our faith is unwavering, we stand the great opportunity of having influence for good on some people. And then Daniel was blessed for his faithfulness. And if we serve God, He will bless us too. He'll bless us in this life, I'm confident. I don't mean that He will necessarily bless us with wealth and riches or anything of that sort. In fact, that might not be a blessing for us at all. But in the end, when there comes a point in time where there is a judgment made, if we are faithful to God in every way and in all ways, God will bless us, even as He blessed Daniel. Just some lessons learned about Daniel. Daniel and the lion's den. It's a simple story, isn't it? But there's some powerful conclusions that we can reach. Maybe even tonight, you are struggling. You're trying to decide about what to do with your life as you stand before God. Maybe it's a lack of faithfulness. Maybe it's the need to find some encouragement to stand for what is good and for what is right. And even as a Christian, you realize that you have stumbled. Well, there's still the opportunity to make changes in our lives. When we see our weaknesses, to ask God and pray for forgiveness of our sins and for strength, for encouragement, or to ask our brethren for help and encouragement in prayers that we can stand as strong as Daniel. We all be a Daniel. Where if we have come to the point of deciding that we need to become a Christian, a child of God, through baptism for remission of sins, now's the time. Now's the opportunity. Would you come as we stand?